If you don't, I will. That's the deal. Father, how we thank you for the word, as we've said each service that we've had. I do pray, God, that you'd help me to be concise. Please help me to be clear. Please help me not to try to shove over much in the time we have. But please help me to be both textual and authoritative, and also practical in ways that can help us when we go home, both for our children and for our grandchildren and for ourselves. And I pray this, Father, in Jesus' name. Amen. Have you ever known a kid who was a so-called child prodigy? Or have you ever known a parent who had a child they thought was a child prodigy? Oh, you should hear him play the oboe. Or you should see her play soccer. Or you should see what a genius he is in school or college. And a little of that goes a long way. No, and I don't know when I'm doing it myself, but I sure see it in other people, right? So what is important to you with your kids? Are you going to be satisfied if they grow up rich and powerful and influential? Is that your goal? So many sermons that I would love to preach, so many that I need to hear and we need to hear. But failure is succeeding at the wrong thing. And I think it'd be good for all of us to think, what is actually success? Who's the wisest man who's ever lived? Who's the wisest man who ever lived? You might say Jesus, and you know, I'm not going to argue with that, of course. You just trumped me. Okay. Solomon. And that has biblical foundation. So let me ask you this, and Pastor Finney, this is where I'm going. I have nothing Pastor Finney doesn't know, so I'm sorry. How many wives did Solomon have? 1,000. Let's just cut the chase. Concubines, wives, whatever. Did he know all of them? Is that a success to you? I'm not smart enough to be that dumb. I'm not powerful enough to have that many wives, and I can thank God for it. What I'm simply saying is, if you are as wise as Solomon, you will fail in your marriage. Now, Solomon was not the wisest man who's ever lived. Solomon was the wisest king who ever lived, because that's what he asked God. He did not say, God, make me wise. He said, God, help me to rule your people. That is something in the subsequent seven chapters that is illustrated numerous times over. God answered that prayer. So if God would answer your prayer to be wise in your business dealings and in your leadership, don't you think God would give you the wisdom to be a good parent and a good child? And don't you think that's probably more important than what you do at work tomorrow or Monday? I'm not saying it's unimportant. I'm saying it's not the first thing. So Proverbs 4 takes us right back to the very most important thing. What is it that we should be shooting for? Proverbs chapter 4, verse 7. The Bible says this: wisdom is the principal thing. Not money, not talent, not influence. Wisdom. Not knowledge, but knowing what to do with what you know. I had rather... You ever known a dumb, smart person? They know all kinds of facts, but they don't know how to come in out of the rain. Wisdom is taking whatever you know, little or much, and making good use of that. There are a lot of uneducated people who are very smart, and there are a lot of people who may not even be smart, but they're very wise. They know how to use the wisdom God has given. So wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get understanding. This is, hear ye children, the instruction of a father. So this is a father to his son. Let me tell you, look. If you make your kid rich and smart and integrated and socially adapted, but you do not give them wisdom, the wisdom of God, that's failure. That's hard, but that's failure. Okay. Now we've got 3 points. I'm going to cut to the chase, okay, just for the sake of time, and so we're not trying for too much. Look, where does wisdom come from? If a child has wisdom, where does that come from? Just take a guess. I won't embarrass you. Where does the kind of wisdom you want your kid to have, where does that wisdom come from? Yeah, it comes from their action, fear. It comes from the Lord, okay? So it includes their willingness. It includes God's wisdom. But what is the catalyst? What stands between the wisdom a kid can have and the wisdom God does have? What stands between those two? You. Me. So this is what I've come to say this morning. Okay? What I've come to say this morning is God gives wisdom through proactive parents. What is a proactive parent? What does proactive mean? Do you know what I mean by that? I'm not even sure. I don't think we use that word much anymore, and so maybe I need to change it. Yeah, responsibility. Okay, initiative, right? Seeing the need and responding without being told. Seeing the need and responding without being asked. Proactive. You're active, but you're active ahead of time. Not reactive. Proactive. Good parents are proactive. Now, let me just give you some verses to write down, because there's a whole premise here that I'm not going to take the time. I don't want to be, I want to have authority, but I want to get to the chase, okay? Proverbs chapter 1, verses 8 and 9. Proverbs chapter 4, verses 1 through 4. Proverbs chapter 5, verse 1. Actually, if you look at the first 7 chapters of Proverbs, okay, what you're going to find in every case is a proactive parent. My son, he takes ownership. Then he restricts him. Don't listen to the strange woman. There are other voices out there. So my son, I'm taking responsibility. Do not, but instead listen to my wisdom. Bow your ear to my understanding. I was my father's son. I have experience. Listen to me. So you're not perfect, but you are dad. You're not perfect, but you are mom. And God gives wisdom through proactive parents. So if I may, let me give you one, as many as 5, but we're not going to prolong. Let me give you 5 actions to take. Now, let me just give you a real quick caveat. Most of these are most helpful for younger children. All of these are principles you can apply to older children. That is, I need to be proactive when my daughter's 25 and still on her own, not married, and with a son who's 19, and if I had a 5-year-old with a 5-year-old. That looks differently by age, but I'm still proactive. I'm still involved. My daughter texted me an hour ago, and we stay in touch. She's very much a capable lady. She's very much, she doesn't ask me for advice any more than I ask Cena's dad or my dad for advice. And maybe you don't have that, I understand that, but you can produce that for the generations to come. Does this make sense to you? Whatever you had before, you are the one that decides what comes after. So 5 actions to take. Number 1, don't ask, tell. Don't ask, tell. You are proactive. You're not reactive. You're not responding, you're responding, right? Don't ask, tell. In Genesis 18, 19, God says of Abraham, I know him that he will command his family after him. I mean, we don't like rules. How do you like them biscuits? Commands, right? Law is what Proverbs calls it. So yes, commands. This is who we are. This is where we're going. In Joshua, famously, Joshua says to an entire nation, choose you this day whom you will serve. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. You can make your choice. They've made theirs because I've said we're going to serve God. You understand the point? The point is proactive. Don't ask. Tell. So here's a young family, and they're about to have Thanksgiving dinner with Grandpa and Grandma, or, Gigi and Nana, or whatever their grandparents are called. And Mom says, Johnny, do you want to sit here? Do you want some green beans? Do you want to thank Jesus for the food? Now, I'm not trying to be harsh. Too many questions. You're going to give the kid a nervous breakdown. That's too much responsibility. Now, when he's 18, I don't think you should be, you should be a father, but not patronizing, not that kind of, not a patros in that way. But look, here's a better way. Johnny, you get to sit by Grandpa. Keep it positive. Someone's going to brainwash your kids. It needs to be you. Sincerely. You get to sit by Grandpa, and you're going to love these green beans. He's 5. He doesn't know. My kids didn't know they liked onions for the first 20 years of their life. And then one day my son accidentally got a hold of something. He realized I'd been lying all these years. Onions are great. But I had brainwashed him that they were evil and of the devil, which, of course, is true. And so someone needs to say, hey, these are green beans. You'll love them. They taste good. Yum, yum. So, and Daddy's going to pray so you can learn how to pray. Daddy's going to pray, don't you think a child should learn how to pray on his own? Yes. How do you think he's going to learn? Hearing you. Right? There needs to come a time when a kid's 16, it's not, hey, do you want these yummy green beans? It may still be, hey, you're going to sit here. I mean, my wife does that for me on Sunday morning when we have guests over. But my point is that don't ask, tell. By the way, we often do this. I do this. We'll give instruction to a child, and then we'll say, we'll follow it up with, okay? Now, I'm not saying it's wrong, but listening to what you're saying, Will. This is what I do all the time. Are you actually asking their permission? Are you asking them if they feel safe with this? I don't feel comfortable doing that. Hang your stinking comfort. You're going to do this. It's going to be good. We've really jumped off a cliff on this whole I don't feel comfortable with business. Right and wrong is what is to be the watchword. But is that okay? No, here's a better way. Look, we're going to do this. Do you understand? Not do you understand, but do you understand? What am I doing? I'm being fair because they can't do something they don't comprehend. What is it you're asking me to do? So don't ask for their permission. Ask, do you understand? So don't ask, tell. That's proactive parenting. Number two, don't respond, act. Number two, don't respond, act. If your only actions are reactions, that is doing nothing in disguise. Okay, let me ask a totally unfair question. And I'm saving the best for last. That way you can hate me and go home and not hate me and talk to me, you know, after the first service. Just joking. But I would hate this. Okay, how often do you say no as opposed to explaining yes? Okay, now, the reason I say, and I mentioned this in the last session, split session, if you're a mom, good night. I know how that sounds, and I don't blame you. And you say, well, what do you want me to say? Go ahead. No, all the no's you've given have probably been A-okay. And God bless you, moms, especially if you've got little kids. That is a lot of work. And God bless you. You have no idea the influence you're having right now on the world you will not see. I cannot change the world I give my kids, but I can change the kids I give my world. And in doing that, I may change the world. So what you're doing is not unimportant. But let me ask you, Mom, how much have you said no today? As opposed to, yes, good. Now, here's the point. All brake and no steering wheel gets you nowhere fast, literally. Here's the deal. Oftentimes, we get upset with our children or even, you know, we're dispassionate, but we're correcting them, and we've never told them what to do. So what they're doing is naturally a matter of ignorance. That is different than saying, this is who we are, this is how we are, attitude, and this is where we're going. Nope, nope, not there. Get back here. This is the path. Nope, nope, nope. That's correction. That's no. And no is valid. I mean, I'm not saying, what do you do? Just tell them, you don't tell them to get off the bulldozer? No, that would be a good idea. Get off the bulldozer. You don't tell them to get off the chandelier? No, probably you should do that. But the point is, you lead with yes, you correct with no. Look, my job at the ranch is to communicate who we are, how we are, and where we're going, and equip every other person to help us get there. Now, am I good at that? No. Am I a failure? Yes. I feel a little self-conscious even saying that because there are people here that would know how inadequate I can be. My point is that's your job as a parent. Here's who we are. Here's how we are. Here's where we're going. No, back here. No, I don't care what Will's family does. No, come back here. I don't care what the Rice's do. You come back here. See, you lead with yes. You correct with no. So don't respond, act. Number three, don't wait, anticipate. You know, I learned something as a, you know, in the middle father, you know, somewhere in my 30s, and that was I knew a lot more than I knew that I knew. And here's where I figured that out. We used to go to church. I mean, I still go to church, but we used to go to our home church when we were home, and we still do that too, but we go to church. And I knew everything that was going to happen. There were two doors. I knew which one I was going to go in. I knew who would be already there when I got there, where they would be standing, where their pastor would be, what he would say, who would come in after me. Isn't that true of you? I mean, you know, tomorrow, it's a script. You don't know that it is, but it is. You know where you're going to be, where they're going to be, what time it's going to happen. So every Sunday we were home, we would come in, and I can see this very vividly. The pastor would kind of do this and then kind of put his hand down like this, and look at my youngest child. Have you ever noticed how adults pick on the most vulnerable part of your family who can embarrass you and shame you, and they can do nothing about it, and you're just stuck there with your hands, and like the dreams you have where you're tied up and your three-year-old's driving your truck. That ever happened to you? I've had that dream. I was on Mackinac Bridge, and my three-year-old was driving the truck, and I was tied up in the middle. It was terrifying. Okay, so you come in, and the pastor would, every Sunday, we are such creatures of habit, he would do this, and he would say, "And how are you, young man?" He never said, "Hey, it's the Rices." He was never over there. He was always right here, always like this, and he always say, "And how are you, young man?" And my three-year-old would stand there and either ignore him. Well, that's what he did. Now, I got to tell you something. Embarrassment is not a good motive for parenting. But if it's all you got, go with it. So I just determined that ain't never going to happen to me ever again. Well, you should have been concerned about the immortal soul of your son. I know I should have. I was concerned about me. It was embarrassing. I thought, this is ridiculous. This is not going to happen again. The next time we drove up to the church, I stopped our Mountaineer, which we have again, in our spot where we always parked on a hill because it's Tennessee. And I said in the rearview mirror, "Okay, everybody, here's the deal. Buster, when we go in that door, not the other, that door, pastor's going to say, 'And how are you, young man?' And when that happens, you are going to look him in the eye. And you're going to stick out your hand. You're going to grip his hand. You're going to pump his hand until he's done. And you are going to say, 'Fine, thank you.' You're teaching the kid to lie. He can improvise later. He needs to know the ground rules. Okay, you're going to say, and I even codified it to, like, you know what they call these? Rules of engagement, ROEs for military. You know what's going to happen. If this happens, wham. This happens, wham. This happens, wham. You got an acrostic to help you know. So our deal was, look up, speak up, smile. Terse, concise, actionable, memorable. I mean, as recently as last year, I did this. We pull up and I say, okay, remember it. Look up, speak up, smile, because it's just, it's the way we roll. Who we are, how we are, where we're going. So from then on, every Sunday, we'd pull up and I'd say, okay, remember, Buster, look up, speak up, smile. Did he always do that perfectly? I don't know that he did, but we had a plan. And that is proactive. I wasn't proactive. That's not my nature. I'm reactive by nature. That was much more effective than getting embarrassed, than clobbering him over the head. I didn't actually do that. But getting onto him for something I had not done. I thought I was getting onto him for something he had done. Really, I was getting onto him for something I had not done. I had not told him what to do. What are the rules of engagement? Look up, speak up, smile. So what I'm saying is, a proactive parent, don't wait, anticipate. Clear, concise, and consistent. Number four, I think it is. I have letter D, actually, because we're cutting this down. Number four, don't endure, ask. Now, this is important, okay? This is really important. Don't endure, ask. Is your home perfect? No. Is my home perfect? Even less perfect than you might suppose, although you may know more than I want you to know. No. No, it is not. But many times, pain is not the problem. It's simply the symptom of the problem. Have you ever had a hangnail on your foot, which is where you always get a hangnail? Well, no. Okay. You ever got a hangnail on your foot? And it hurts. It hurts like crazy. You come to church. And subconsciously, you are protecting that big toe. So you lead off with the other foot. You know, maybe eventually you'll have a shake hands time. I don't know if you do that now or not. But you have a shake hands time, which I know is terribly unhygienic, but whatever. Being friendly is not very clean. So you lead up with this foot like this, and like you shake hands, you're guarding the foot. And after a while, because you're too stubborn to go see the doctor, which I've heard that these people exist, what happens is you start to compensate for your sore toe. You don't address the sore toe. You just bear it. And it's not forbearing or long-suffering in a good way. It's just a dumb way to do this. So you go around like this, walking weird and acting weird because you don't want to address the problem. Now, I found I do the same thing with my kids. I'm not trying to be harsh, but here's a family, and they're going to see Grandpa, and she's over the river and through the woods. And when do they leave to go on this 300-mile trip, this epic journey, like Odysseus? When do they leave for Grandma's house? 3 o'clock in the morning, the dead of night. Why? Because all my kids are dead asleep. Right? And we know if we don't travel when they're unconscious, my, they're going to be a problem. Now look, I had a child. In fact, I think I had three childs, and they all hated the car seat. And one of them anyway, I remember distinctly. And you need wisdom, you need patience. And I'm not saying that a four-year-old is going to sit up like a 30-year-old adult on a trip to grandma's house. But I just want you to think about something. How much of my life am I compensating for something I should be instructing on? Okay, I can't have pastor over for Sunday dinner because my kids might embarrass me. This is not a matter of I got to have perfect kids. This is a matter of, look, if that's the case, that's an early tell that I need to work on my kids so that I can be embarrassed by pastor. That's fine. It's okay. I'll get over it. He'll get over it. We'll get over it. But I need to help them so they can be prepared for life. Are they going to go through their whole life not eating lunch with the pastor? Then they need to learn that, and they can learn that right off the bat. They can learn that before they can talk. And I'm deadly serious. So what I would just say is that when it comes to being a parent, we are to be proactive parents. That's where wisdom comes from. Don't endure. Ask. For what are you compensating? If you don't know how to act, actively find out. Years ago, I was holding revival meetings in Tucson, Arizona. And my uncle's an evangelist. He was actually, I preached at my home church, actually about the time pastor was in our area. And I preached that Sunday, and Uncle Pete actually showed up. But he's an evangelist, and I love my uncle, but he does not suffer fools gladly. He does not put up with nonsense. And so after, I was nervous preaching. My uncle was there. And we went out to a steak place afterwards. I think it was called Hardee's, Burger King, something like that. And so we're eating out after the service, and we're in a booth. And here's, I can see this like yesterday. Here's Aunt Nettie. Here's Uncle Pete. Here's me. Here's my wife. Here's our three-year-old, two-year-old, maybe old enough to say, barely. So we're like talking maybe in a year and a half. Actually, I can almost figure it out. Anyway, real little kid, but old enough to talk. Kids can talk very early. They can understand very early. They don't understand no. Do they understand ice cream? My dog understands ice cream. Yeah, your child understands. So we're sitting there, and I said something, and this little teeny tiny mouth, like a year and a half, 2 years old, says, no. Now, that may mean nothing to you. That's fine, but not in my family, that means something. I thought, in front of my Uncle Pete, he told me no. I looked at my wife, and in like terror, I said, what did he say? Now, memories are not objective. You don't know, you don't remember what happened. You remember what you think happened. So what I'm going to tell you, I'm sure it didn't happen, but yeah, it did happen. Okay, so if we went back and reviewed the tape, it'd be exaggeration. If you're talking about what I feel like happened, this is exactly what happened. Kid says, no. I look over at the scene and I said, what did he say? My Uncle Pete grabbed the other end of the table. He pulled himself into my face and he said, no. As if to say, Rice, you know how you were raised? I know how your dad was raised. I know how you should be raising this kid. What you doing, pal? Now, I think you need to be very careful in the input you give your married child. I'm going through this now. And my kids we're blessed. I've talked to my parents about my children because I realize now, hey, I'm an in-law. And my dad just kind of smiles. I think he's laughing inside as if to say, welcome to the party. Like, how do you talk to your married kid? And it's like, Dad, he gives me the answer. But when I was asking the question, it's not, we're all good. It's all good. We're just like you. So I'm asking my dad questions about my grown children. And it's kind of like, yeah, you finally figured this out, huh? You think being an in-law is easy, huh? Well, guess what, pal? That's not what he said. But so I think you have to be careful. My parents have done very little of that directly. But I am so thankful that Pete Rice held my feet to the fire and helped me. You know what? Passivity is the brother of pride. If you don't know how to act, actively find out. Look, no one here is perfect, but that's why you have a church. And that's why you have a pastor. And that's why you have other people that they're not perfect. Maybe they can teach you from their failure as much as from their success. But you have people in this church that have gray hair or have years on you. And that's one of the beautiful things about a church. So don't endure. Ask one more thing and we're done. Do not accept, determine. Don't accept, determine. These are not the kids you ordered. Then work on the parents God demands. At Murfreesboro, Tennessee, every year they have a big, not every year, but one year they had a national event called Mustang Makeover. Have you ever heard of Mustang Makeover? They take horses off of Bureau of Land Management land in Nevada, for instance, and they'll give it to a person that will take this horse for free. They work on it for several months, and then they have this big competition where they see who has done the best training. And these horses are amazing. They go from the deserts of Nevada to, drinking tea with their first two fingers, almost. They don't have fingers, but they would if they could. It's amazing. And you look at those horses and you think, wow, what an amazing horse! Did you know you're complimenting the wrong person? Because a horse is not a person. It's not the horse. It's the trainer. When I was a little kid, we were in El Paso, Texas. And a lady very graciously invited us over for dinner. And she asked me a question. And I said, yes, ma'am. I was three. I said, yes, ma'am. What a virtuous child. And you must be born in the South. It's not because I was virtuous. And it's not because I was from the South. It's because I had parents who wanted practical ways I could show respect. There is no respect if there's no way to show it. So you can do what you want, but I said, yes, ma'am. And she said, oh, he's not one of those kind, is he? Was she knocking me or was she knocking the parents who had put so much blood, sweat, and tears into my life? And when you see a kid, you think, what a good child. Look at the way he behaves in church. It's not the child. I wish I had mild children like yours. We're strong-minded. And look, the Bible works no matter who you are. And there might be different variables, but there's hope for your home. There's help for your home. So it's not the horse, it's the rider. Look, you need the Lord. You need a plan. You need consistency. You need habits. I think we should have an idea of where we want our children to be. Like what they'll be doing 5 minutes after the service, and in 5 days, and in 5 years, and in 5 decades. You can't ensure that. You're not God and you're not a tyrant, but you are a parent and you do have God to help you. Years ago, Winston Churchill said, and he meant this literally, I've come to realize, he meant this literally. He said, history will be kind to me, for I intend to write it. He wrote more books, longer books, than most people have read in their life, and I'm not joking. History will be kind to me, for I intend to write it. Years ago, someone asked a godly, elderly preacher, or actually he wasn't elderly at the time, he said, how do you know your kids are going to turn out? And he replied, because I'm the one turning them out. Now, if that's pride, if that's arrogance, if that's hubris, I want no part of that. If that is a humble dependence on a God who will do his part as I do mine, I don't think any of us are drowning in that today. And we probably could all use a little bit of that today. So I don't know where you are, but take heart. There's a God in heaven. He's given us encouragement. He's given us commands. He's given us instruction. And I may not know the answer to every question, but as I respond to the answers I have, God will give me for the help I need. The Bible tells us in Proverbs, wisdom is the principal thing. And the way children get the wisdom of God to their lives is from a dad and a mom, or both, who are proactive between the God who gives and the child who can receive. Would you bow with me for prayer, please? And then Pastor will come and conclude our time together. Let me just urge you about this. Has God spoken to your heart today? Can you think of something you need to start today? Can you think of something you don't agree with today? Or a question you have today? That's why you have a pastor. That's why you have a church. And I'm honored to be a part of that right now. If you have questions, if you have needs, get the help you need before you leave today. And if you need to take action, think about what one thing you can do before supper tonight that might make a difference by God's grace. Father, how we need your help. We realize how frail we are when we think about other humans and our impact on them. But we're reminded of how powerful we can live when we're trusting you and your wisdom, no matter how divergent it is from the times and the popular thinking of our day. Help us to love people, but to love you more, and to have a determination to do what you've said. And God, I pray that we'd see homes that are blessed in the days ahead, marriages and singles and grandparents and parents and children, because of our simply taking your word at face value and depending upon you to make it good. And Father, we pray this in Jesus' wonderful name.